Wow, there are a lot of good films this month, and we've got a long list of films here for November we're going to be analyzing and helping you figure out. Which do you see in theaters, and which one should you just stay at home and, you know, see in the comfort of your home? I'm John Owens here with co-host Tim LaPointe, late at night on Halloween, at this time, you know, that we're recording. But to open us up, Tim, tell us, do you think the 1998 film A Bug's Life was a foreshadowing of our society today?
I actually do.
It's time for...
Man, that is so deep.
There's a scene in Bug's Life that lives rent-free in my head. So Bug's Life was my favorite movie as a kid. And the scene is towards the beginning of the film when there's a leaf that falls and the ants have no idea what to do. And the leader goes, "Nobody panic, we are going around the leaf. We are going around the leaf." And I think there's a tendency in today's society that when an obstacle jumps in our way, we're like, oh crap, what do I do now? And we need somebody to tell us, unfortunately, we need somebody to tell us nowadays to go around the leaf. We are slowly becoming ants that are getting thrown off one bit at a time.
By leaves.
By falling leaves.
Interesting fact about this film. I did not realize this. Did you know Kevin Spacey was in this film?
Was Hopper.
Yeah, I did not realize. Yeah. I was looking, I was like, oh, because I didn't really recognize most of the, I mean, I kind of like, there's a couple of people that I'm like,
oh,
eh.
It's a phenomenal cast.
Yeah. Yeah. But Kevin Spacey's stood out.
David Hyde Pierce, who's my favorite character in Frasier, Bonnie Hunt. You've got young Hayden.
That's true.
What's her name? Man, it's good stuff. I mean, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Phyllis Diller.
Yeah, yeah. See, this is why we have Tim on the podcast, because Tim knows all the actors and actresses, and that is definitely his my strength. But yeah, Kevin Spacey, interesting in this one. Moving past that, coming up in this podcast, we're covering the films set to hit theaters this month, and here are the ones we're covering. What Happens Later, Divinity, Priscilla, The Marsh King's Daughter, The Holdovers, The Marvels, It's a Wonderful Life, except It's a Wonderful Knife, Journey to Bethlehem, Your Lucky Day, The Great Turkey Town Miracle, The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, Thanksgiving, Trolls Band Together, Next Goal Wins, Wish, and Napoleon. So with all of those lovely movies.
List.
I know. It's a lot of movies this month. A lot more than October. Actually, a lot more that I'm excited for than when we were in October. But I guess let's jump straight in and go to What Happens Later.
Hello, Wilhelmina.
Hello, William.
How have you been?
Oh, for the last 20 years.
25, maybe.
I've been 49 forever and ever and
wow,
ever.
Wow, lucky you. I feel like I've been in my 50s since. This is exactly why we broke up.
So basically, my
facility will power down to essential function only.
Come on!
Is that a thing?
Oh, it's a thing.
This one's interesting.
Yeah, it's director Meg Ryan, which I had to look it up, but my wife knew immediately who this
you
was.
You had to look up Meg Ryan?
Yeah, I did. When I did, I was like, oh, I felt really dumb when I had to look it up, and I'm like, oh, that's who that is. But
the queen of rom-com.
That's probably why.
It's true.
Synopsis for this. Two ex-lovers, Bill and Willa, get snowed in at a regional airport overnight, indefinitely delayed. Willa, a magical thinker, and Bill, a catastrophic one, find themselves just as attached to and annoyed by one another as they did decades earlier. So quirky. But as they unpack the riddle of their mutual past and compare their dreams to the dreams they once shared, they begin to wonder if their reunion is mere coincidence or something more enchanted.
That's a good question. I mean, so I personally actually am a little bit excited for this.
Yeah.
You've Got Mail, in my mind, is the greatest rom-com of all time. You've also got what some would argue is the greatest rom-com of all time, and When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah.
She had a great run going with Tom Hanks for a while. It started with Joe Versus the Volcano. And it's interesting. I mean, she's been off the map for a long time.
Yeah, I was going to say, that. Maybe that's why I had to look her up, because I just haven't, like, when's the last time she had a film come out? It was...
So she actually directed a film back in 2015.
Ithaca?
That I had not really heard of. Yeah, Ithaca. But, I mean, obviously in the, you know, you're talking 90s and 2000s, even all the way back to Top Gun, she had a decent role in that one as well. But it's interesting to see that Meg Ryan is now directing a rom-com. But there's a couple really fascinating tidbits about this one. So one is David Duchovny is playing alongside her, who also has not done a lot of film work, at least as of late. He's done a lot of television stuff. One being the X-Files, obviously, which Fox, Mulder, and the X-Files. But the other thing, from at least my limited research so far, I think there's only the two of them in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if anybody else is in this movie.
I think they maybe have some, like, employees or something, or maybe they're off to the side that you just don't see. But, I mean,
if I go to IMDb, you've got Willa, you've got Bill, and Airport Voice is the only other credited role. Yeah, so Meg Ryan wrote this with a couple other writers, directed it, and stars in it. And so the fact that she's coming back with rom-com, which is kind of her sweet spot, I'm actually mildly intrigued.
Interesting. I mean, I have to say, so this one was actually supposed to be released on October 13th, but it got pushed back because of Taylor Swift. Go figure. Which, yes, Tim, I did go watch that in theaters. And yes, Taylor Swift's concert did show up as a background soundtrack for my Killers of the Flower Moon showing.
No.
Yeah, it did. I heard
you. Oh, boo, gosh.
Boo, boo. Like during the thing, I'm like, where
I'm
is?
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. My wife leaned over to me and she's like, I know what song this is. I was like, that's great. I thought we were far.
Yeah,
and the
I'm
thing
glad
is, they had it.
Dolby.
They had it on the other side of the theaters. Anyways, so this was filmed in Bentonville, Arkansas, at a regional airport. And I got to say, by the trailers, Tim, you and I have been through some regional airports. It was a pretty good sized regional airport. Not many regional airports have like walkways and stuff for people to be in. So it's a $2 million budget. My wife asked, because we have at the end of this, we're going to be predicting box office bombs and box office, you know, all that kind of stuff. And she questions like, don't you think it's going to be a box office bomb? I'm like, it's a $2 million budget. Like, it can't bomb that much, right? I mean, in a studio sense, especially with Meg Ryan, I'm sure they'll cover. And I honestly haven't heard, they're not really doing any marketing on this. So it probably is not too much of a marketing budget anyways. I mean, have you heard about this?
No, I hadn't really heard a whole lot about it. I heard something about Meg Ryan and my ears perked up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Especially again, because she's been off the radar for such a long time. So,
yeah.
I mean, obviously it doesn't look like they're trying to do too much, but hey, good for Meg. Getting back in the game.
Yeah. November 3rd. That's coming out. Next up we have Is Divinity. One I had definitely not heard of beforehand.
This world has been threatened. Reproductivity has been declining at a staggering pace.
True immortality of both body and mind.
Just the right size to fit your pocket.
Is death just an illusion?
The synopsis is, it's set in an otherworldly human existence. Scientist Serling Pierce dedicated his life to the quest for immortality, slowly creating the building blocks of a groundbreaking serum named Divinity. Jackson Pierce, his son, now controls and manufactures his father's once benevolent dream into a malicious nightmare, centers on two mysterious brothers who abduct a mogul during his quest for immortality. Meanwhile, a seductive woman helps them launch a journey of self-discovery.
Yeah.
This trailer is an acid trip. If you could have one without acid, I would say it kind of gave off like initially some Lighthouse vibes, albeit with a cyberpunk kind of vibe to it.
Yeah, I can see that.
I don't know if that was because it was just like, it seems like the whole thing's in kind of black and white in that aspect ratio, but it kind of has that art house feel to it. Immediately interested. I thought it looked genuinely interesting just from the way some of the set pieces looked and how they were doing things. It looks very, very art house kind of vibes.
Yeah. Well, what's especially intriguing to me about this film is that when you look at the director, the cinematographer, the editors, they've not done a whole lot. And so it's intriguing to me to see something that's so original and so bold being done by people who are fairly new to the film game. And so, yeah, this could be really interesting. And I wonder if this will be a film that we'll look back on in 5-10 years and say, oh yeah, do you remember when that crew made that film and now they're making this kind of stuff?
Mm-hmm. I would agree with you, because it does have like some very interesting creative kind of choices. It almost has like I wonder if they were more in music videos before this, because it kind of gives off that little bit of that vibe. Interestingly enough, the script, there was no script. The film was made without a script, according to Al Cesar, which I'm guessing is the director, which I should know. There is no script for this film, he said. So I was trusted with the virtue of doing my own thing. And I started drawing and sketching ideas. And that's pretty much how it all came about. Another interesting tidbit is that for the extended fight scene, they used stop motion.
Intriguing.
Yeah, it's very interesting considering there's, it's not like claymation or anything like that. It's like people. So stop motion is, that's kind of an interesting way to do an extended fight scene. And it's on my radar. Whether or not it comes to the theaters near me or not, I'm definitely going to have it on my list for to watch later. Next up is Priscilla.
Hi. What's your name?
Priscilla Boyer.
You like Elvis Presley?
Of course. Who doesn't?
Mr. Presley, you got women throwing themselves at you. Why my daughter?
Well, sir, I happen to be very fond of your daughter.
Oh, I need a woman who understands that things like this might happen. Are you going to be here or not?
Got moved also by Taylor Swift's concert, but I think this one, it makes more sense to get moved because it had some award buzz and it's an A24 film and it looks like it's going to be good. The synopsis I found everywhere is pretty simple. The film follows Priscilla Presley and her life with Elvis Presley. And a lot of people are saying that this actor, my wife was mentioning that she saw a bunch of jokes online about how, who's the guy that played...
Austin Butler.
Yeah, Austin Butler.
For Elvis.
Yeah, they're saying he just won, like, you know, just got so much recognition for that award. And now Jacob Elordi is coming in and he's kind of like killing the role so much that people like him more so in this role.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Another Euphoria, there's a couple Euphoria cast members that are coming out in some of the movies this month. It is going to be kind of interesting because most of the things you hear about people like Elvis Presley is you get the bad side of it. You get some of the terrible things he's done, but it's still kind of like romanticized, I guess, in a way, even in the Elvis movie that came out. What was it? A couple years ago now? Was it last year?
Man, feels like a lifetime ago.
I know. So with that one, I could see how there was some of that stuff, like his infidelity and some of the way he treated his wife. They got into it a little bit, but they kind of like romanticized it in a way that like she almost like looked on him with pity instead of it being like this seems a little bit more on her and how he kind of treated her.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. I mean, you've got Sofia Coppola, obviously the daughter of Francis Ford Coppola, directing this one. Mm-hmm. And she's kind of got her own approach to things, which is pretty interesting. Again, you're looking at a cast that has not had a whole lot of opportunity to do a whole lot. And much like Elvis, it seems like kind of put Austin Butler officially on the map. I know it wasn't his first film, obviously. It kind of wonders if this could be that kind of movie as well. They could put a few people on the map.
I'm going to think so. I mean, Rotten Tomato from the critic score perspective, and take Rotten Tomato for what you will, it does have a 91% to start off with. So it's going to be in the award nominations somewhere down the line. Like it's going to be there. It might not win.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people are really still on the Elvis train coming out of last year's movie. And so to come out with this one from the opposite side of things, playing more Priscilla's side, it's I don't know of a better word to say for it. It's just, I think it's a smart move to do that. And it's interesting to see A24 get behind this film too. Mm-hmm. A24, it feels like, especially in the past year or two, has started to inch more into the indie film scene. Like not more into the indie film scene, but more into the straightforward dramas.
So actually, I'm glad you brought this up because The Wrap actually reported earlier this month, back in October, that A24 is looking for action and big IP projects as part of its new strategy, de-emphasizing the traditional character auteur-driven dramas the studio has made previously. So I think they're looking to expand. I think A24 is realizing that they could probably do some bigger things at this point because they're picking some things, which is, I don't know what to think about that because they're looking to make those more commercial style films, which is fine, but I really hope that they don't move away from the art house kind of, because we don't really have other studios that do the art house stuff as well, like as much as they do. Moving on, again, another film that was pushed because of Taylor Swift. The Marsh King's Daughter.
What you got here?
It's Habitat.
Helena Erickson?
What are you doing with my house?
What's going on?
Your father, Jacob Holbrook. When was the last time you spoke to him?
When I was 10 years old.
Holbrook, he's the Marsh King guy that I heard about on the radio.
He and another prisoner escaped last night.
I think he's coming for me.
You'll always be my little shadow. You must always protect your family.
In a tense thriller, the Marsh King's daughter, a woman who has a secret past, will venture into the wilderness she left behind to confront the most dangerous man she's ever met, her father. In the film, Helena's, Daisy Ridley, seemingly ordinary life hides a dark and dangerous truth. Her estranged father is the infamous Marsh King, the man who kept her and her mother captive in the wilderness for years. When her father escapes from prison, Helena will need to confront her past, knowing that he will hunt her and her family. Helena must find the strength to face her demons and outmaneuver the man who taught her everything she knows about surviving in the wild.
Here's a fun fact for you, John.
Yeah.
Do you know, so the DP on this film, any idea what favorite film of yours he was the DP for?
I'm trying to look.
That would be none other than the movie Sunshine.
Really?
The same DP is Sunshine, who also worked with this director on Divergent as well. So, yeah, a lot of respect for that DP. To be honest, I'm not going to try and pronounce his German-looking name, I assume.
Yeah, I can't. Look, I pronounce names wrong all the time. I'm going to get, like, crap over it, so I'm not going to try and pronounce this.
So, I'm glad to see Daisy Ridley get in a lead role like this. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's going to be interesting to see when she expands out of Star Wars, you know, what can she do as the top billed actress in a film. Now, I like Ben Mendelsohn. It doesn't seem, you know, I mean, it's not a star-studded cast. You'll be on those two, and, you know, there's not those big names that you may be looking for in a film.
Yep.
It's an intriguing concept. I feel like with Daisy at the center of it, I'm hopeful that it's not just action thriller, but maybe it leans a little drama too, and gives her some space to play with, as an actress. And it'll just kind of be interesting to see if this becomes a pivot or a turning point in her career as she moves forward.
So I guess this is a question, and this is kind of why I've always liked how Star Wars has kind of done things in as far as the actors they procure. Mm-hmm. Do you like films that, you know, like there's big actors and actresses in, or do you find yourself liking films that maybe you don't know these actors and actresses as well?
It depends on the film, because again, for somebody like John Cena, like we talked about last month with Freelance, like I kind of just know what a John Cena movie is going to be like.
I know that one's at a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes,
which is incredible.
Which people are saying it's an affront to John Cena.
Yeah. But then there's some movies like, you know, obviously your top actors like a De Niro in Killers of the Flower Moon is a great example. You got Leo and De Niro in there, and I am all for it. You got another movie coming out this month, which I won't mention, but there's a big actor in a big film coming out later this month that I know that actor's in it. I'm all there for it because I know that actor's line of work. I trust their body of work. But just to that point, though, like movies like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I'm probably going to get a lot of flack for this. I didn't think Brad Pitt was very good in that movie. And I thought Brad Pitt very much just played Brad Pitt. Like, it was a very straightforward role. It was not impressive to me. I have no idea how he won the Oscar. No offense. Like, Brad Pitt's a great actor. But again, depending on the movie, depending on the actor, I've seen Brad Pitt in some stuff where I'm like, hey, he's great. But then there's a movie like this where to me it's distracting that it's Brad Pitt because he's just playing Brad Pitt.
All right. Well, we've moved out of November 3rd and we're moving now into November 10th. First film on our docket, The Holdovers.
You just earned yourself a detention, sir.
Being with you is already one big detention.
Son of a...
You don't tell a boy that's been left behind at Christmas that nobody wants him? What's wrong with you?
I find the world a bitter and complicated place, and it seems to feel the same way about me.
I gotta say, when I watched the trailer for this one, I immediately texted Tim, and I'm like, I know which film you'll probably want to see out of, beyond like maybe Napoleon that's coming up later, which one you'll want to go see the most out of this list. And it is The Holdovers, because I would say it has a very vintage vibe to it. Even the trailer, the trailer is like straight out of the 80s with how they did it. In The Holdovers, Paul Hunman, Hunham. I don't know how to pronounce that. A universally disliked professor at a prep school. Yeah, because they can't pronounce his name. At a prep school called Barton Academy, with no family and nowhere to go around the holidays in 1970. I did miss it by a decade. He stays on the campus to supervise students who couldn't go home. After a few days, only one person is left. A troublemaking 17-year-old named Angus. A good student whose bad behavior always threatens to get him expelled. Along with the school's head cook, Mary, whose own son was recently lost in Vietnam. The three form an unlikely bond as they spend Christmas together during two very snowy weeks in New England. Now, right off the bat, this synopsis sounds a little bit like a Hallmark film. It is nowhere near being a Hallmark film. No. So just to put you at ease, there's another one on this list that is a Hallmark film, straight Hallmark film, we'll talk about later. But The Holdovers, Tim, This is a film you're interested in. What do you think?
Man, so there's a lot of reasons that I'm very interested in this film. One, I'm from New England, but a movie in New England, sign me up.
True.
I'm all there
right.
for it. Two, Paul Giamatti. Anything Paul Giamatti. I think he's a phenomenal actor. Just absolutely love Paul Giamatti. He's a very, I would say, very passionate actor. And just captivating on screen.
I was trying to remember it. He's been in a bunch of things I've watched as far as animation and voice acting. I was like, oh, okay. But like, I remember his face in it. And it, I remembered finally when we went through kind of the list. The John,
is it the Frankie Muniz film?
No, it's the John Adams TV miniseries that HBO put on. Like, that's what I remember him from. I actually, that was really well done too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I remember him from. I'm like, yep, that's where I remember his face from.
Yeah. You know what movie this is giving me vibes of is a little bit of The Fabelmans, actually.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you kind of get some like Breakfast Club kind of vibes? Like a little bit? Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I was thinking with this kind of film. It just feels like that 70s, 80s kind of style of film, but with a little bit of a modern touch to it, I would say.
Oh, man. It was filmed in Massachusetts, too?
Yeah.
Home sweet home.
It was released for limited theatrical release in the United States on October 27th, and it will be wide released on November 10th, 2023, as we mentioned before. Now, another one that's likely to steal most of the spotlight for this this release date, November 10th, The Marvels.
Carol Danvers, prodigal child of the Milky Way.
Nick Fury, my favorite one-eyed man of intrigue.
You took everything from me, and now I'm returning the favor.
What is happening to me?
So we switch places whenever we use them.
Strong theory.
Oh my God, we're a team.
Bringing back to an MCU, a Marvel film, and Marvel films have not fared well this year, unless it was Guardians of the Galaxy. The synopsis for this one, which I guess, I mean, if you guys haven't seen the trailers at this point, good Lord. Carol Danvers, a.k.a. Captain Marvel, has reclaimed her identity from the tyrannical Kree and had taken revenge on the Supreme Intelligence. But an unintended consequence is see Carol shouldering the burden of a destabilized universe when her duties send her to an anomalous wormhole linked to a Kree revolutionary. Her powers become entangled with that of Jersey City superfan Kamala Khan, a.k.a. Mrs. Marvel, or Miss Marvel, I'm sorry. And Carol's estranged niece, now Saber astronaut, Captain Monica Rambeau. Together, this unlikely trio must team up and learn to work in concert to save the universe as the Marvels. Return to box office success or failure for the MCU here, Tim?
Big failure.
Big failure?
Yeah.
In what way?
Big failure.
What do you get kind of watching the thriller? And
My gosh.
This is like a juxtaposition between you and I, because I've watched most of the Marvel TV shows, including Miss Marvel, for this to understand like why I would like maybe like this. I know you're not as in that world as I am.
No, but here's the thing. Even though I'm not a big Marvel fan, like when the trailers come on, I'm like, okay, you know, I guess I can see why people would get excited about that and get behind it. Like, this trailer came on when I was watching football the other day, and I thought, man, am I the only one that's just tired of this? Like, there's...
No. I don't think they're marketing this well.
Honestly, there's nothing really intriguing about it. I love Brie Larson. I think she's a phenomenal actress. I thought the first Marvel movie that she was in, like, wasn't even really that great. And so there's not really any attachment that I have to anybody who's in the film. There's not really any attachment that I have to any of the characters coming back. Like, I really feel like where Marvel has suffered, and the reason that Guardians didn't suffer as much, is that you've lost so much of your lovable characters and heroes that people are rallying behind. And so creating a movie that's centered around what I perceive to be one of your least loved heroes, I just don't anticipate that that's going to do too well in the box office.
Yeah, and I think it's because the backlash on Brie Larson, which I don't know is necessarily, like, deserved. It's not really a reflection on her. She's a great actress. Like, great actress.
Yeah.
I don't know. I see, I'm kind of interested in this one. I thought maybe this one might be the next step that they kind of needed, because, like, the Ms. Marvel actually had a really good rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, it was actually very well made. The show that they have on Disney Plus, at least in my opinion. But you're right. Like, a lot of these are characters that are not really the ones that have done well. What was it? The first one that Brie Larson was in actually did pretty well when it came to the
box office. Was it Captain Marvel?
Captain Marvel, yeah. It did really well when it came to the box office. But I don't know. Marvel, at this point, they've already talked about the fact that they're going to be doing, like, a soft reboot here at some point, and that they're already restructuring how they're doing content. And actually, for Disney Plus, instead of just, like, constantly making, like, short-lived, like, shows on Marvel, they're actually going to start doing season twos and threes of things, and, like, making it a little bit more serialized content like normal TV shows, which, go figure, they haven't been doing, and it hasn't been working very well, because I think you're just jumping from now one character to the next and the next, and you kind of get tired of just, like, having to restart on shows all the time. Like, you like them, but it's like, I want to see more of this. And I just don't think they've been getting to that.
Well, I think that's why, you know, the new Spider-Man films have been so successful, is that, yes, it's still a superhero film, but it's a very original and new take on the superhero films that we're used to seeing. And I do think that you're eventually going to reach a point. I know that studios have been claiming, like, we just want IP. We want to put out content that people are already familiar with. But especially when you look at movies this year that have come out, people are craving something new. They're craving originality. And even with films like the Barbie movie, that's still based on IP and based on a product, it's an original approach to a familiar thing.
Which now, of course, they're making freaking, like, spin-offs off of that to going to, like, everything else Mattel. Yeah. And it's like, you guys don't like that. We don't want more of that. Like, Barbie was great as a standalone. We don't need a Barbie 2. We don't need all these other things. It was good because it was original. And also because he had a freaking great director in that who knew what she was doing and knew how to write the story well. And it's going to be interesting to see if studios can figure this out at some point. Anyways, we're going to get out of the superhero genre here. Thank God. Moving on to a great film. It's a Wonderful Knife.
Angel Falls, I give you Christmas.
So pretty. This is perfect.
What did you eat?
Somebody please help me!
Meryl Waters? Everyone would be better off if I was never born.
You'd be safe now.
Wonderful indeed. What are we doing?
RLJ Entertainment has unveiled an official trailer for It's a Wonderful Knife a year after saving her town from a psychotic killer on Christmas Eve. Winnie Carruthers. Life is less than wonderful, but when she wished she never had been born, she finds herself in a nightmare parallel universe and discovers that without her, things could have been much, much worse. Now the killer is back, and she must team up with the town misfit to identify the killer and get back to her own reality. I gotta say, Tim, there's nothing better than a holiday horror film. I love it. I get so tired of watching the 2000 Hallmark movies that come out every year for Christmas that I love it when things don't go well for anyone involved in the film.
I mean, just so chaos and destruction. I'll admit, obviously, you know, I'm not a huge horror film. I had a family member who persuaded me to go see Krampus when it came back a handful of years ago.
That's a good movie.
And I actually very much enjoyed Krampus. So if this is anything like that, I might be down. Funny enough, this director was also the writer of a movie that came out last month, Five Nights at Freddy's.
Oh!
He's not directed a whole lot, funny enough. So this will be interesting to see just how this goes. But he has worked on a number of Christmas movies, funny enough.
Fascinating.
So I don't know if he loves Christmas, or maybe he hates Christmas, and that's why he's making all these holiday horror films, but...
Interesting. I would not have guessed from watching this trailer that was the Five Nights at Freddy guy. It's definitely low budget.
Now, different director. Like this, the director of this film wrote Five Nights at Freddy's.
Now I can understand. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
But you can kind of get a sense of his voice.
I like it. And, you know, Five Nights at Freddy's actually is like the box office hero of the month, honestly, of October. Like, it is done really well at the box office. Go figure. Yeah, It's a Wonderful Knife. Interesting. I'm definitely probably going to watch it at some point. It looks hilarious. It also like is a little nice little spoof off of A Wonderful Life, which is an incredibly long movie.
Easy. Speak carefully.
Okay, I like it. I mean, I like It's a Wonderful Life. I do question sometimes the philosophy of It's a Wonderful Life, but I love holiday horror films. I just have a soft spot in my heart for them. They're great. They provide us
a
nice
soft spot.
They provide us some nice realism in a time of Christmas bliss that I just, gosh, like
oversaturated optimism.
Oh, like, I mean, we're October 31st tomorrow, Tim. It's all starting. It's all going downhill tomorrow. Christmas starts November 1st until it ends whenever my wife decides to take the tree down in March. On to talking about Christmas. Journey to Bethlehem.
Mary, you are to be the mother to a savior and king.
Here we go.
Yeah,
go see it in theaters.
Yeah.
Move on.
Let's see if you guys can guess what this is. A young woman carrying an unimaginable responsibility. A young man torn between love and honor. A jealous king who will stop at nothing to keep his crown. This live-action Christmas musical celebration for the entire family moves classical Christmas melodies into new pop songs. New pop songs in a music-filled and infused retelling of the timeless story of none other than Mary and Joseph in the birth of Jesus. A unique entry into the collection of holiday classic movies, this epic Christmas musical is unlike any before it. I'll believe that last line. It's definitely like unlike any before it. And when I saw this open up, I was like, and there's all of the white actors for this.
Yeah.
And then randomly Tony Banderas appears out of the abyss.
It's such a weird mix. Like the director of this film, as far as I know, has not directed anything before, but most of what his career has been around is like musical soundtracks that he's worked on, like for Glee and things like that.
What?
But then you've got Antonio Banderas.
That makes sense. Okay.
You've got Antonio Banderas, but then you've got Lecrae, like Christian rapper Lecrae, and Joel Smallbone, who's in a very successful Christian band. And I'm not really sure.
Wait, which one's in John?
What?
What's Smallbone?
He's in For King and Country. He's one of the brothers of For King and Country.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just not really sure what we're trying to do here. Like who we're marketing to, because even if you're trying to get to a faith-based audience, are you trying to reach a like musical
look, my
theater audience?
My grandmother will 100% go to this if she found out about it.
Yeah, I don't understand it. I really don't.
Do you remember the camp movie, the Christian camp movie musical that they made?
Yeah.
This kind of seems similar to it. I wonder if there's like similar entry points to this. Because that one seemed less, that one was cringy.
Even the DP hasn't really done, he's done a lot of work, but not necessarily a ton to recognize, except like the film he's most famous for is the 2004 Christian Bale film, The Machinist.
What?
So yeah, they're, that's what was, it's just a what? Really interesting mix that's
a,
here.
Such a weird movie to end up on.
Yeah. And like the editor, but then you take that guy who's worked on The Machinist and match it with the editor of Clifford the Big Red Dog and Charlotte's Web. So once again, no disrespect against any of these people who have had way better careers than I, way more successful careers than I. But I will reiterate, I don't know what we're trying to do here.
Do you think this maybe is done by that church out in Texas? Or I think it's out in Texas. The one that like takes and steals every IP under the sun and makes it into a Jesus story. Like when they took Iron Man and nailed him to a cross.
Marvel's thing? Yeah. Maybe.
You think it's that? I mean, I doubt it. This sounds like something that they would, they're like, we've done every musical Christmas number under the sun. Who did it?
Affirm Films.
Oh, that's not surprising. This feels like an Affirm Films thing. I don't know.
This is going to be on PureFlix real quick.
It just fascinates me sometimes to see which famous actors or actresses end up in these films, like from TV shows or films, because there's always a couple of them. I got to say, like at the end of the day, how many times can you tell? This is just like another one of those stories that's like, how many times can you tell it in a film? I can't say that I've seen it in a musical before, I guess. I guess we got there, but I feel like Charlie Brown Christmas special or whatever is the way to go for this around the holidays.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You don't need much more than that.
No. If you guys would like to journey to Bethlehem, that is coming out again, November 10th. We're still on November 10th. All right. Finally, the last film. Actually, never mind. This isn't the last film. Your Lucky Day.
America don't care how you get your money. Think about that old question. What would you do if you had $1 million?
$156 million! Give me that ticket right now!
The synopsis for this one on Your Lucky Day. After a dispute over winning a lottery ticket turns into a deadly hostage situation, the witnesses must decide how exactly how far they will go and how much blood they're willing to spill for a cut of the $156 million.
This is giving me vibes of, what's that movie that came out like 10 years ago where everything's legal. It's like the
Purge. The Purge?
Yeah, The Purge. I was going to say The Prestige, which obviously is not.
The Prestige. Yeah. No, it's The Purge.
This is giving me The Purge vibes.
Yes.
But maybe a little more serious-ish. But yeah, you got Angus,
I love that
Angus
you
Cloud.
Had that. I love that you had that because when I watched the trailer for that, and there was this one scene where like the police are like taping over their uniforms with stuff. And I had that same thought. I'm like, wait, is this another Purge movie? So yeah, I'm glad you, but go ahead.
Which is like, I mean, it's again, I'm a big fan of unique ideas. And I think the Purge was a really unique idea at the time. I know some people give it some crap, but Your Lucky Day seems like it's just those hypotheticals that like, I don't know. I feel like John and I kind of every now and then just sit and think for a while and come up with weird hypothetical questions. Mm-hmm. And this feels like a hypothetical question that I might come up with in the middle of the day of like, oh, what if there was a dispute about a lottery ticket or something,
and this is kind of exploring those
ideas further.
Yeah. And this is kind of set up because I watched the trailer. So basically this guy, I can't tell if he's a criminal. That's not really clear, but he has like a gun on him. And this couple wins the $156 million lottery ticket at a gas station. And he decides he's going to try to take it from them with a gun. But he doesn't know there's a cop in the bathroom. The cop tries to come out and stop it. The cop gets shot. The store owner, the married couple who she's pregnant as well, and him all make a deal with each other somehow that they're going to split the $156 million. And he's going to let them go as if no one can know about it, about the death of the cop.
Intriguing.
So it's it's one of those, it's a very philosophical questioning film, and I'm very interested about it.
Well, and you've got basically a first time director who also wrote this, and Daniel Brown. And you've also got Angus Cloud, who sadly passed away about a month ago, but has gotten a lot of attention for Euphoria.
Yep.
So I know in the film world, he's a very intriguing actor. This could be just a really not your typical dark film. You know, this isn't going to be like It's a Wonderful Knife kind of deal. I think this will have a little more human aspect to it, should I say?
Yeah, you could say that. I mean, I think it's going to be an interesting film. I think it's definitely worth a watch from initial, like, just glances at this from what they've given us on the trailer, because I'm kind of interested to see where it would go. Like, mm-hmm. who ends up with the money? Do they all, like, it's a very big, it's like a social question, right? Like, if you had all this money and all you had to do is just, like, you had nothing to do with it, but you had to, like, hide a body or bury a body or whatever and never speak of it again, would you go for the money?
Also reminds me a little bit of the 2018 film Widows with Viola Davis.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I like it.
I feel like every now and then you need a good crime thriller. And we don't get a ton of those nowadays.
And a crime thriller with an ethical question, an ethical, moral, and philosophical question that every person, I think, would struggle with, I think.
Yeah.
Your lucky day. Maybe not so lucky. All right. Last film of the November 10th lineup. Ooh. And this one might be the movie of the month, Tim.
Takes the cake.
Yeah.
Or the turkey.
Yeah.
Should I say?
The Great Turkey Town Miracle.
It's 8:55 in the morning here at KXT. Stick around for the network news at 9. Getting close to Thanksgiving. Until tomorrow, this is your morning mouth, Connor McCloud.
The station's been sold.
I'd like everyone to meet our new procurement director, Connor McCloud.
A homeless shelter.
Yeah, the House of Hope.
We're going to need $100,000 to keep the shelter open. And for Thanksgiving, 4,000.
4,000
turkeys.
Widowed, Morning Drive, DJ Connor McCloud. Angus Benfield. Radio station has been sold and there's no longer a need for a Morning Drive DJ, so he's let go. With two daughters in high school, Connor must start looking for new employment immediately. With good jobs few and far between, especially for a middle-aged DJ, he meets Ethan, a believing homeless man. Who encourages him, and after many failed job interviews, miraculously, the House of Hope, a busy homeless shelter, hires Connor to be their procurement director. His first assignment? To obtain 4,000 frozen turkeys for needy families on Thanksgiving Day. Just 1 month away. One thing is certain, he will require a miracle to pull this off. I love how they don't necessarily describe in the synopsis of... I love this description. A believing homeless man...
Oh my gosh.
What does that mean? He believes.
Oh my word.
Okay.
Hey, you know that the star of this film was in a movie that we were fond about last month.
Who?
The Post.
Oh no. Is it?
Yeah. Apparently.
Oh my gosh. Of course it is. It's like the same.
You know, here's a lesson for you folks. They say, don't judge a book by its cover. I say 1,000% judge a movie by its poster. You can definitely look at this poster and make a pretty healthy decision for yourself about what you want to do about it.
Just watch the trailer. You can see a few scenes that you're like...
When you're writing a script for a movie and you say, you know what would be a great character... A morning drive DJ whose radio station has been sold.
Okay. But do you know who would do that though, Tim? Do you know who would do that? And I have a theory on why this is even in the movie theaters. You know, I think Hallmark has been getting a little loose with their security around their compound they got up there in Canada in the tax-free land of filmmaking. And somehow this film hobbled its little turkey legs out of the compound and ended up in theaters somehow. This just reeks of a Hallmark movie that should be on Hallmark and not anywhere near a movie theater.
No, and so apparently, to further elaborate on what I said earlier, is that this movie is starring the same guy who was in The Post. It's also directed by the same guy.
I wonder if I can find tickets. If there's tickets to this, I'm definitely going to go. All right, we don't necessarily always make fun of movies this bad, but oh my gosh, I don't have much more to say about this.
No.
All right, we're going to go ahead and move on to November 17th, mercifully. We got, going from the Great Turkey Town Miracle, we got The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes.
After everything you've seen out there in the world, what are The Hunger Games for?
Smile. It's why we have teeth.
Welcome to the capital. Let's see you use that famous snow charm.
Let me ask you one final time. What are The Hunger Games for?
Years before he would become the tyrannical president of Panem, 18-year-old Cor... Oh, gosh. 18-year-old Snow, I'm not going to read his first name, is the last hope in this for his fading lineage, a once proud family that has fallen from grace in a post-war capital. With the 10th annual Hunger Games fast approaching, the young Snow is alarmed when he's assigned to mentor Lucy Gray Baird, the girl tribute from impoverished District 12. But after Lucy Gray commands all of Panem's attention by defiantly singing during the reaping ceremony, Snow thinks he might be able to turn the odds in their favor, uniting their instincts for showmanship and newfound political savvy. Snow and Lucy's race against time to survive will ultimately reveal who is a songbird and who is a snake. Tim, what do you think about The Hunger Games?
I hate them.
just completely? Truth. Or do you hate that you got that you got Jennifer Lawrence out of this?
Now, granted, I didn't really watch them when they came out. So I watched them in the past couple years. And I understand they came out during a time where teen drama book-based films were a big thing. I understand if you love the books, you love the characters, whatever. But if you want to be completely honest about the production quality of these films, they're terrible. Absolutely terrible.
I would say that for the first one. They brought in actually a new director because the first one was so bad. And the second one's probably the second one of these is probably the best one. They also, I don't know if you caught this, on the second one, used IMAX cameras exclusively. IMAX film cameras exclusively for a while they were in the arena area.
I don't even care.
Okay.
Don't even care. No, I mean, so the big finale of the series, you've got the last two films that they've broken in two films for no reason.
Yep.
Legitimately, the first 45 minutes of the part one, nothing happens. Legitimately nothing happens. And again, you'll hear me say it a lot on this podcast. For me, whether or not I'm going to watch a film or whether I'm going to like a film has a lot to do with trust.
Yep.
And when you have a series of films and you take an entire, the 45 minutes of an entire film where nothing happens, you've lost my trust. And what stinks, honestly, is that I love this cast.
Mm-hmm.
This is a, look, I might even go see this movie just because of the cast. It might cover that multitude of sins from the previous films.
Do you like Rachel Ziegler?
I love Rachel Ziegler. She was phenomenal in West Side Story. Viola Davis, big fan of. Peter Dinklage, huge fan of Peter Dinklage. There's a great cast in this film. Mm-hmm. But my goodness, here's the honest truth. Teen book-based dramas should have never really been its own genre. You want to base a film off of a teen book, it can still be a better genre than what that genre was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the hard thing with the adaptations of books and stuff is always going to be down to the fact that if you don't do it the right way, people are going to be upset about it, about the books. Yeah. This one, I got to say, looks a little bit more interesting to me than the original films, partially. I don't love the color grading of the film, which my wife told me that that's how the book kind of is and that's how the other ones are. I'm like, yeah, I don't really love the orange and teal kind of look. It kind of almost makes it feel a little bit more like the newer Harry Potter films a little bit to me.
Yeah.
In a sense, and I just don't love, it doesn't feel serious. And honestly, this thing, I feel like this should be a little bit more serious feeling in its color grading. And again, that's just my like color grade. I like my color, like color grading should match your film. And I don't know that this necessarily does. Yeah. Any other thoughts on Hunger Games, Tim? I know we got into some sidetracks there, but
no, I mean, good for them.
All right, we're moving on. Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving is an institution here.
No!
Someone's out for revenge.
This is weird.
Where this goes, the more twisted it gets. The weapon he's using is straight off a Thanksgiving table.
It is going to be a very happy Thanksgiving.
This one I'm really excited about. We're getting like two for one this month in holiday horror films. After a Black Friday riot ends in tragedy, a mysterious Thanksgiving-inspired killer terrorizes Plymouth, Massachusetts. Tim, Plymouth, Massachusetts.
That's true.
More Massachusetts, the birthplace of the holiday. Picking off residents one by one, what begins as random revenge killings are soon revealed to be part of a larger, sinister holiday plan. Will the town uncover the killer and survive the holiday, or become guests at his twisted holiday dinner table? I gotta say, so for this one, it's the same lead actor.
Why did I put this? Journey to Bethlehem.
I think so.
So Joseph from Journey to Bethlehem is in this movie. So he's got two potential big box office movies that are coming
out
this
year. Was I right? Did I write that correctly?
No, I wrote that.
You wrote that. Oh, I was going to say, I don't remember writing that in our notes. Wow. Nope.
Same actor.
How do you go from Journey to Bethlehem the musical to Thanksgiving?
It's easy. It's called Your Job and a Paycheck.
I guess so. But this is like just the direct opposite of that. I have to say, I can't remember the last time I was shocked watching a trailer by the horror of it. Have you seen the trailer for this, Tim?
Yeah. And it's actually kind of fascinating to me that it seems like a lot of what happens in this film surrounds dishes served at the Thanksgiving table. Like, that's kind of fun and creative. Some of these casts this month are really interesting. You've got Patrick Dempsey.
Yep.
Who's best known for Grey's Anatomy.
Yep.
Although some may argue that he's best known for Enchanted. And then you got Rick Hoffman, who's been in a ton of television stuff throughout the years. Like, and he's played a bunch of like one-off kind of roles too. Like, he's been in an episode of this, episode of that, episode of this, episode of that. Like, so he's not done a whole lot of movies. And then again, like we said, the guy from Journey to Bethlehem is in this. And then you got Gina Gershon, who's not really done a whole lot recently, at least, like, of note. Just fascinating cast for this one.
Fascinating. So they really play into the Thanksgiving theme, and I appreciate that. There's a line.
Cob, like, ear, yeah, it, you know.
Oh my gosh. Oh, the ear one where, oh my God.
Yeah. There's a corn.
There's this part in the trailer where this girl is like cleaning her ears with a
Q-tip.
A Q-tip, which you should never do in the first
place. Pilgrim.
And then like you think that something's going to happen with that, because, you know, like the horror movies always make you think that the most innocuous things are going to be bad. And then she takes out her ear like, oh God, it's good. And then someone legit just stabs her in her ears with two corn on the cob skewers, like real quick, and she can't hear anything. Oh my gosh. Then there's other things where people are in an oven. People are, oh gosh, the worst one is where someone pours water on a woman and then sticks her to the frozen door of a freezer door.
By the way, she's stuck kind of there. Genius writing.
Oh, it is. And then gets killed with an axe. Supposedly it's off screen, but man, oh, that one, I was like, okay, this film's not playing around with it. It's
no, but also,
more to say about it.
If I'm going to be a little critical, why do we have to make such a beautiful meal? Like the Thanksgiving meal, something evil. Like, can't we just enjoy nice things? Is that too much to ask for?
I don't know, Tim.
Like, I just want to be able to sit at my Thanksgiving table this November and eat my turkey, my stuffing, my cranberry, my corn without, like, thinking there's going to be a pilgrim lurking behind my shoulder, going to stab some skewers in my ears or something. Like, let's just leave well enough alone, please. Like, you want to mess? It's bad enough that we're already messing with Christmas. Like, Thanksgiving too, y'all, is too much.
I'm going to let you know, Tim, I will definitely be going to see this film.
I also might go see this one, too.
You going to go see it?
I might.
Okay, you have to say some of these. This will be, I would more say, a body horror kind of film. In a sense, like some of the creative like kills.
Yes.
Like, oh my gosh.
You will not see me near any walk-in freezers anytime soon.
I know. After that, I was like, nope, no, thank you, no, thank you. Oh, blech. And both of us know what that's like being in the cold. As I grew up in New York, and you grew up in up in Maine. You don't It'll play around. You don't play around with the metal and the, cold. All right, moving on. Now we got a much more lighter, happier Trolls band together.
Bro, you're making baby Branch nervous.
And I quit.
Branch, we're out of sync. We've gone from boys to men, and now there's only one direction for us to go.
Branch!
I'm John Dory, Branch's brother.
Puka shell necklaces, denim tuxedo.
Did you have frosted tips?
Ah! Look at you, you were so cute. I love it.
After two films of true... There's only been two
there's
films.
There's only been two?
How? Of true friendship and relentless flirting. Gosh. Okay. Poppy and Branch are now officially, finally, a couple. Hashtag Broppy.
Spoiler alert.
Poppy discovers that Branch has a secret past. He was once part of her favorite boyfriend. Boy band phenomenon Brozone with his four brothers. It's like a Joe Jonas situation.
Apparently.
Brozone disbanded when Branch was still a baby, as did the family, and Branch hasn't seen his brother since. But when Branch's bro Floyd is kidnapped for his musical talents by a pair of nefarious pop star villains, Velvet, Amy Schumer, and Veneer, Andrew Rennell's Book of Mormon, Branch and Poppy embark on a harrowing and emotional journey to reunite the brothers and rescue Floyd from a fate even worse than pop culture obscurity. Literally in my notes before I even read this was, does it always feel like a new one of these movies is coming out to you?
Yeah, I've not seen any of these. I mean, my kids have, and my kids love the soundtrack to these.
That makes sense.
What little I know of these, it seems like that soundtracks are kind of what keep these movies afloat. Respect to Justin Timberlake, like some of the songs on these soundtracks, I'm like, that's a bop.
Yeah, it's just like, gosh. I will say this film specifically feels like it's been needing to come out for like the past year. And I don't know if that's like a COVID thing, but I've been seeing trailers for this all year long, and I just want this thing to come out and be done. Now, the interesting thing, and this is a kid's film and whatever you want to say, and it's the trolls and it's the music stuff. The interesting thing that would make this worth seeing in theaters with your kids or something is that certain theaters in the US are doing a concert version of this, and they're doing similar to how Taylor Swift has done her concerts with the light up wristbands, and they have light up bracelets.
Interesting.
Again, for this that will light up with the specific songs in the film. So it's kind of a fun interactive thing for kids. I guess that would make it worth seeing in theaters in a certain sense. I have to admit, I've never seen a troll movie.
Same.
Would you really, Tim? You ever taken your kids to go see troll movies?
I have not. No. Wow.
You gonna go see them? You gonna go take them to see this one?
I may. Yeah. It's. Like, kids' movies are kind of fun to be able to take your kids to go see a theater, for them to just kind of get that big scale experience. You know, I took one of my kids, last month to see Paw Patrol? Mm-hmm. There's just a shot of a buoy floating in the water, and all of a sudden this big aircraft carrier type thing comes rolling through, and he just goes, wow! Like, you know, kids, I'm a big fan of exposing your kids to the movie theater early on, where they can see things on a big scale, hear things on a big scale. Trolls is that kind of movie that I think would be a great experience. So there's probably going to be songs that they're going to love to sing along with. If you don't have kids, maybe it's not your cup of tea, but it's also not made for you. So
I don't have kids. I have a dog though. He might've liked Paw Patrol.
Yeah, it's true. Take Marshall out to go see Kid Cudi and Eric Andre.
I bet he'd like it. All right. That's about all the trolls band together. Have fun seeing that. Tim. All right, next up, last of our November 17th, week before Thanksgiving films. Next Goal Wins.
Soccer, as you like to call it, is like life. Next season, I think we have a real shot.
I'm sorry, Thomas, did nobody tell you? You're fired.
This follows the American Samoa soccer team, infamous for their brutal 31-0 FIFA loss in 2001. With the World Cup qualifiers approaching, the team hires, down on his luck, Maverick coach Thomas Rongen, Michael Fassbender, hoping he will return the world's worst soccer team around in this heartfelt underdog comedy. My wife said that she felt like this should be a John Hamm film instead of a Michael Fassbender film. And I gotta say, it's kind of weird after watching Michael Fassbender do so well in Prometheus and Alien Covenant, playing the android, to see him in a role that's not that, because he did such a good job and it was so creepy.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's got another movie coming out, I think this year, The Killer. And he's done really well in a lot of different drama
phenomenal
roles
too. Actor, I think.
Yeah, he's really good, which is actually why I'm pretty excited that he's in this, because I think it just kind of tells you how seriously Taika Waititi is taking this film, which, by the way, Taika Waititi, I mean, what else do you need to know? So written, directed by him. He's also in the movie, of course, because it seems like he's always working himself into these things, which I love because he's phenomenal. Also was intrigued to see that Elizabeth Moss is in this, who's in probably more known now for The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
Being in that show.
God, that is a brutal show.
With her. With The West Wing, she was great in that many a year ago.
Really? I don't remember her in The West Wing.
Yeah, she was the president's daughter.
Oh, yeah, Zoe, now when you were Bartlett. Saying that, I was like, that's right. See, yep. What I first remember her is from Mad Men.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so from Mad Men, and definitely in The Handmaid's Tale, which, gosh, that show is the most brutal show ever made.
Yeah. But Taika just does a really good job of balancing comedy with drama. One of my favorite movies that's come out in the past handful of years is Jojo Rabbit. And I love his sense of humor. He's a great, great writer. And so I'm really intrigued by this one because I think he balances well that heartfelt kind of pull the heartstrings, but also just have you rolling on the floor laughing kind of vibe, which is really difficult to do because I feel like when comedies try to get serious, it ends up getting cheesy. And when dramas try to get funny, it's not actually funny. But he does both really well.
My wife had asked me specifically about this one as because I didn't have this in my go to see this with a significant other or go on a, like, this is a date film. If you really want to, like, dig super deep on the story, it's a story about another American going to another international place to fix something that's wrong with an international community. And not only that, but it was a punishment to have to go there in the first place. So it's like. I was like, if you want to have that discussion on a date, have fun.
Yeah.
Just not say anything about the movie, but I was just like trying to come up with some good examples for why this might not be a great, like, first date movie if you don't know the person you're going on a date with.
That's true.
Yeah. Anything more on that? I think it's a soccer movie about someone who comes and fixes a team that went 31, who lost 31-0 in a game, which is
just sounds like a fun ride. Sounds like a fun ride.
Well, all right, last weekend in November, November 24th, we've got only two films, mercifully, this month, with this week, which actually makes sense because it is the week of Thanksgiving, which means these are probably going to be released on like a Tuesday or Wednesday of this to get some of that holiday traffic.
Yeah.
First up, we've got Wish.
I'm here. Whew, just 1 second. Let me catch my breath.
Once upon a time stood Rosas, a most magical kingdom founded by a king with the power to grant wishes.
You're right. I am a handsome king.
Some of these will never be granted.
Not some. Most.
They deserve more than...
I decide what everyone deserves.
Which is a Disney animation, which follows 17-year-old Asha, an optimist with a sharp wit, who cares endlessly about her community. In a moment of desperation, Asha makes an impassioned plea to the stars, which is answered by a cosmic force, a little ball of boundless energy called Star. It's really creative. Together, they face the most formidable foes to save her community and prove that when the will of one courageous human connects with the magic of the stars, wondrous things can happen. This film was inspired by Disney's Centennial, which tries to tie together themes from all Disney films. And also connects with, I don't know if you saw Disney's little thing they put together from the Centennial with all the animations that they did. They put a little, like, I think it's like a 15-minute thing where they're all trying to, like, get a picture together. Like, every single one of Disney's animated characters from the beginning to now. And it's like a fun little sequence between all of them. They even bring out the little, you know, the things that they never like to talk about, like the Atlantis characters and, what's that? The Treasure Planet characters.
Yeah.
This is kind of interesting.
Interesting.
Have you seen the trailer for this one?
Yes. And I actually, so I can't be credited with this opinion. It was a top comment on the trailer, but I agree that this main character looks and acts like pretty much every main character that Disney's done in the past several years.
Yeah.
Like, very unoriginal look and animation style. And the idea of it doesn't even really seem that fascinating. It feels like, hey, we had to make a movie to celebrate the 100 years of Disney. So here it is.
I mean, I'm interested to see it and it's in like support animation in general, because I really don't think animation sometimes gets the support it needs. But like the only thing I thought about this is like it kind of feels like a cheap ripoff of like the Spider-Man kind of look.
Yeah.
But and I don't necessarily even mind that they're going back to this look, because I think there's been way too many of the 3D modeled stuff that's just like, it's fine, but they're not really doing anything interesting with them necessarily. Mm. So I don't know. I also kind of wonder in some of this is the trailers they're putting together are really trying to aim towards more families, and maybe we're not really seeing the better parts of everything they've kind of done here. So I'm kind of waiting till I see this in theaters to kind of get a little bit better of an opinion.
Yeah. No, I'm not. Disney to me is kind of getting in that little Marvel era in a way, like running into the same problem what we talked about earlier.
Well, they are Marvel, so you know.
Well, yeah, but just running out of originality, you know.
Yeah.
Just
well, that's because Kathleen Kennedy keeps going back to the Panderverse stone, where she gets all of her ideas from.
No, interesting.
Yeah. South Park came out with a thing this past week with the Panderverse, which is basically that Kathleen Kennedy gets all of her ideas from an AI stone that she can access and touch, and it gives her all of the ideas it's funny. Wish, we'll see. I think it could be good. I think it could be good. The trailers, I think, kind of let it down a little bit. I think they're releasing it on November 24th. Because they're looking to get some kind of like what Elemental did, where it kind of like rebounded through a long, long theatrical release and gained some more of its money as people kind of went to the theaters to see it over the holidays. I think they're going to do that here with this. You're going to get the Thanksgiving holiday and it's going to run all the way through theaters through Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. They're looking for that holiday money of, you know, releasing a movie on Thanksgiving. There's not going to be a ton of other stuff that's still going to be in theaters. It's going to compete. I mean, Trolls might compete. Which honestly, with the release of Trolls, I don't know how good that's going to look for Wish.
I don't know. I guess we'll see. It'll be interesting to kind of see how that does. Next up and last on our list, and I'm so happy to have a great film to wrap up this week with.
Finally.
Because we've had some duds, let's just say, the past couple of months to wrap up, the ends of these episodes.
Yeah.
Napoleon.
General.
We are discovered.
Good.
I'm not built like other men.
Will not lead a second in command.
I found the crown of France in the gutter and placed it atop my own head.
Made by none other than Ridley Scott. Napoleon, I mean, if you haven't heard of Napoleon at this point, I mean, whatever. It's a spectacle-filled action epic that details the checkered rise and fall of the iconic French emperor, Napoleon Bonaparte, played by Oscar winner Joaquin Phoenix. Against a stunning backdrop of large-scale filmmaking orchestrated by legendary director Ridley Scott, the film captures Bonaparte's relentless journey to power through the prism of his addictive, volatile relationship with his one true love, Josephine, showcasing his visionary military and political tactics against some of the most dynamic, practical battle sequences ever filmed. And I gotta say, those battle sequences, they are talking about some of the behind the scenes stuff. We're gonna be doing some content on the production of Napoleon on the Frame Voyager YouTube channel going into how they made this. They used 11 cameras at once during some of the battle scenes to speed up how long it would take to film them.
Wow.
It's pretty crazy. It was pretty interesting how they did this, because they were, Ridley Scott was talking about how before, like years ago, it would take them like weeks, maybe months to film like battle scenes. But with like being able to use so many cameras at once because of the digital stuff, it just completely makes it fast.
Huh.
Last fun fact before we kind of get into our analysis of this film. Did you know, Tim, that Ridley Scott's first film was The Duelist, which was actually set in the Napoleonic time period and actually has to deal with soldiers, two soldiers during that time who are constantly trying to duel each other or something like that.
I did not know that.
It's kind of an interesting like bookend. And look, I mean, look, Ridley Scott's got another film coming out next year, which would be Gladiator 2. So he's not done making films, but it's kind of like Martin Scorsese. Ridley Scott is up there in age. I can't remember if he's like 75 or 80. But he's getting up there. He's made like 27 or 28 films at this point. So it's getting kind of close to the end for him, but like, I gotta say, Napoleon looks excellent. I've been excited about this film for a while.
I mean, so I'm to the point, and I know I'm in the minority. I don't really watch a ton of movie trailers. And especially from movies like this, where I already know it's Ridley Scott, I already know it's Joaquin Phoenix. Like, there's not much more else that I need to know beyond that. And so when you asked me earlier in the podcast, when we were talking earlier about, you know, well-known actors versus unknown actors, like, I trust Joaquin. I trust Joaquin Phoenix as an actor. Also, Vanessa Kirby stars across him. She's been in some of the Mission Impossible stuff. Also was in starting a movie with Shia LaBeouf, funny enough, called Pieces of a Woman. And I have a lot of respect for her as an actress. So I don't really need to know a whole lot. Like, you could tell me that this movie's going to be 4 hours long, and I'm still going to go see it anyway. Just fascinating concept. And obviously we know from Ridley doing Gladiator that he knows, as much as he's known for his sci-fi stuff, that he knows how to handle historical films really well.
Yeah. And like, even from like The Last Duel and other things he done, which Last Duel, to me, it did not do well in the box office, but it's an underrated film for its very hard look at philosophical topics. But Napoleon looks like one of those epic must-see films. And just the way he, like, it, Ridley, and it has that iconic Ridley Scott, like, dark tone, his atmospheric look that he always kind of goes with. Ridley, when you watch a Ridley Scott film, I think a lot of times people just don't know, but, like, he has, like, very specific ways and looks and feels for all of his films. And, I mean, single-handedly back in the day with Blade Runner completely shifted the entire genre of sci-fi into figuring out what a dystopian look looks like. I mean, we're going to be talking about this again. We're doing another thing on Ridley Scott and like all of his past work leading up to Napoleon here this month. But man, like, he is like the stuff he's contributed. He's kind of more known. I would say, you say Ridley Scott, people know him for Alien. They know him for Blade Runner. And maybe they know him for Gladiator. I don't even know if a lot of people could pinpoint him to Gladiator necessarily off the street. Why do you think, like, I mean, he made countless historical films. Why do you think people wouldn't recognize him more for Alien and Blade Runner, which he has also said in the past that he almost kind of wishes he had never made Alien in a sense, so he wouldn't have to have that baggage?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with, like cult following, if you will.
Yeah.
In the sense that Alien and Blade Runner just have, here's an interesting thing. I feel like Gladiator is known more so for the talent on screen, like Russell Crowe, Joaquin Phoenix, especially fairly early in their careers. Whereas when you think of Blade Runner, you think of Alien, you think more, at least I do, I think more so of Ridley Scott. Mm-hmm. So I think really when you look at the sci-fi films that he's done, it's easier to pinpoint his fingerprint on those films than it is with something like Gladiator. It kind of feels like you could put a Martin Scorsese on Gladiator and it would probably like be equal level. Whereas if you put Scorsese on Alien, Blade Runner, and the understanding of those other worlds, I don't really think you'd get the same kind of results.
That's a fair point. And honestly, you could say like the amount he changed the genres when it comes to Alien and Blade Runner. They were iconic films that really did change the course for sci-fi films over the decades. Even now, like the influences that they've had. I think that's interesting. I think Napoleon's going to be a great film. Oh, so excited to see that. And it's great. It's during the holidays, right before Thanksgiving. Like, you'll be relaxed. Like, nothing's going on. It's going to be great.
Yeah. No, I'm very excited.
Now it's time for our so-called experts to make their picks. Should you stay at home? See it with a date? Die happy never seeing it? And for the final selections, which movies would you go see in theaters?
All right, Tim. Box office pick of the month.
You know, as much as I'm not wild about this film, I feel like the audience is there to make Hunger Games a big box office performance this month. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people loved it, still love it. Whether you read the books or not, I just think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to go out and are curious about this coming back so many years later.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I actually have Napoleon versus Hunger Games in this category, mostly because, and if I was a betting man, I would go with Hunger Games. Mm-hmm. But I think Napoleon has an outside chance of maybe doing something, maybe doing like a little bit of an Oppenheimer because it has a little bit more action. But historically, like biopic films or the historical kind of in nature don't perform that high in the box mm-hmm. office. We would say like looking at Killers of the Flower Moon, which is a box office bomb, $230 million, like not anywhere close to its $200 million box office projection. Of how much it costs to make. But in fairness to Scorsese, he's never made a film that's passed $230 million at the box office. So honestly, like what Oppenheimer did, hitting almost $1 billion in the box office was crazy, which mm-hmm. is why like I could give Napoleon a maybe, because I think it has a little bit more action, it's a little bit more marketable, and it's a little bit more interesting looking than Killers of the Flower Moon.
I think it'll do well. Sure. I just think Hunger Games is going to be more sustainable.
And that's what I would say. It has a bigger IP to it and has a probably like it already has that following. It's going to get a set amount of money anyways.
And it's going to get more repeat watches.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Box office bomb. Which one's going to just bomb out of the sky, Tim?
The Marvels. Oof, I just don't see it. I don't see it carrying. There's just not enough attachment to it. I think there's some Marvel fatigue. I just don't see it doing well.
I agree. Marvel's was in my selection as well. But I also had a split here between Napoleon being a box office pick of the month and a box office bomb, because I also think that Napoleon could also bomb depending on some factors. I don't think it will, but it is a potential. All right. See it at home. Which films should audiences see at home? You only got a couple of dollars to spend. You know, you got like only so much to spend on theaters. You can only see so many movies a month. Which ones should you just wait for, Tim?
Yeah. I don't think Wish, out of the kids' movies coming out this month, I don't think that's really worth taking the kids and paying for the popcorn and all that stuff. So I would put that one on See It at Home. What Happens Later, you know, as intrigued as I am about that film, I think that's a great stay at home, date night with the wife, you know, sit on the couch kind of movie. And while I plan on seeing this movie in theaters. I could see where a lot of people would want to wait till it comes out to streaming would be the holdovers.
Interesting.
So I want to see this one in theaters. I would encourage people to see it in theaters. But if I had to put it in a category, and you were limited with what you could choose to see in the theaters, I would say this is one that you could wait to see at home.
Fair. And I agree with you on what happens later. The Wish, and it's actually a split for Wish, and I'll explain that later. And It's a Wonderful Knife. But I've also added in here Next Goal Wins and The Marcia's King Daughter. Next Goal Wins, I just don't see that as a film I need to go see in theaters. It seems like one I'll watch over the holidays at home. And The Marcia's King's Daughter, while I'm very interested in seeing that, don't know that that's one you need to see in theaters. I think you could watch that at home and be fine.
That's fair.
I could be wrong. It could be a little more cinematic than I'm thinking, but from what I'm getting from it, it looks like a great story, but I just don't it's a hard month, to be honest. There's a lot of big movies, to go see in theaters, in my opinion. So that's kind of what I have for see it at home. All right, we're moving on to the category of take your significant other to go see this. Tim?
I would go with Priscilla. I think Priscilla's going to be a good love story, maybe even heartbreak story. Just chill kind of vibe. If you got a date night, I think Priscilla would be a good movie to see the follow-up of, how does this guy follow in Austin Butler's shoes? I could see this being a good date night movie.
Do you think that's a good thing for a date to see if you're taking someone, maybe even for the first time or a few dates in, to show that you support a strong, independent woman?
Yeah,
in this film.
Sure.
Is that what you're thinking? To kind of give the
go for
kind
it.
Of give the kind of give that 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 signal to that person you're going on a date with.
Yeah, why not? Let's do it. Now, where you might have to be concerned. Is that Elvis is a good looking guy. And if they portray him well in this, you might not end up on a second date. So while I would recommend you take your significant other, just tread carefully.
My date idea would be The Holdovers. It's a classic 70s, 80s kind of film. It feels like a pretty good feel-good movie at the end, and it seems like a fairly safe one to take someone on for a date, maybe the first time. Maybe you're 5 years into your marriage. It could be 5-10 years. That would be great, I think. The Holdovers. It just seems like a great date movie to me.
Yeah.
So that's my pick for taking your significant other or a date on. Tim, if you died right now, literally right now,
that's
what would you be happy never having seen?
All right, so I feel like there's a couple that you might join in agreement with me on.
I think we could just say it right off the bat. Journey to Bethlehem.
Yes. and the Great Turkey Town Miracle.
The Great Turkey Town Miracle. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm good without those. The one where I feel like we might differ.
Ooh.
I don't think I'm going to go see The Hunger Games. And I could be very happy without seeing The Hunger Games. Just can't get down with it. Can't get down with the genre. Can't get down with the story.
Putting that into the same vicinity as Journey to Bethlehem and the Great Turkey Town Miracle.
Yeah. Part of it too for me, I'm very much a contrarian. When things get overly hyped, I tend to back off. And there's a lot of hype around this thing, and it makes me very skeptical. So, like we said at the beginning of this podcast, we are going around the leaf, and a lot of people are just trying to walk in a straight line. I choose to go around the leaf.
Jim's walking around the leaf, ladies and gentlemen.
I am walking around the Hunger Games leaf, and I will not cross it.
Okay. All right. Okay. For our final picks of this month and the end of this podcast. See in theaters, Tim. What if you got $10 in your pocket, which it might be more than that at this point. I don't know. I get a subscription. What are you going to see in theaters this month?
Oh man, Napoleon off the bat for sure. Ridley Scott is just great at epics. He's really good at epics.
If there's one film you can see this month, go see Napoleon. Make it Napoleon.
Yeah. Absolutely. I also want to see Priscilla. I like seeing bold performances on the big screen. Yep. Big fan of that. I want to see The Marsh King's Daughter in theaters. A thriller, got some action to it. I think that could be one where the sound, the size of the screen could be a really big play into the experience of the movie. Also probably Trolls. You know, I think they could be a fun little family outing.
Yep.
And look, I'm not going to see it in theaters, but if you're a superhero fan, then you should definitely go see the Marvels in theaters because,
yeah, I agree.
Like, sound, visuals, that's the best place to see it.
The Marvel movies never look as good when they're on a TV screen. Like,
no.
You can really tell a lot of the CGI elements. So I kind of agree with Tim, and I'll kind of preface this of the top end movies before I move into some surprises maybe on this list. Napoleon, for sure. Hunger Games, which Tim didn't mention, but I think like the Hunger Games makes sense as a film to go see in theaters.
Yeah.
And I think you could see it after. Yeah. If you're into it, go see it in theaters. It is like made for theaters. Wish, I would say, as a split. I think it'd be a good holiday film to take some kids to. I understand why that would be a theater film. And obviously the Marvels and Trolls, like we both said, the Trolls, especially if you can get those wristbands and you can go with the kids and watch them like as a theater. I think that's a cool experience to do it. Like, you're not going to get that at home. The surprise pick, Divinity, I think, would be Divinity. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my wild card pick. I feel like that's one of those films that sometimes when it comes to these art house films, going to see it in theaters is way more impactful than trying to watch it at home. Because at home, you can be distracted by a lot of things. In a theater, especially that film, you're probably not going to have a lot of people in it. You're in the dark. You kind of have to sit there and you do connect with the film unless Taylor Swift's playing next doors. Yeah. But for this one, this one sounds loud. But topic of the month, Napoleon. And that's about it, guys. I'm trying to think of anything else to wrap up this with. Be sure to follow us on Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you like to get your podcast hosted and listened to. That's where we are. And we're also on YouTube, which most of you guys watch on YouTube anyway, so it doesn't matter. But subscribe to Frame Voyager. Leave us a little like, little comment, little star rating in there in the podcast rankings. And Tim and I will be back next month for December, wrapping up 2023. And have a happy Thanksgiving, guys. Go watch Thanksgiving, the movie. I just you'll have a great, happier Thanksgiving if you do. It's just one of my opinion.